Good evening. I'm Travis Shaddix. This is Turfgrass Epistemology. I'm so happy you could join me tonight. I have to again move very quickly because we have a lot to get to. I'm only doing two shows a week, so I end up having so much more content and I got to cover it in two shows rather than four. So it makes for a little quicker show or quicker pace show, I should say. Welcome. You're here because you want to know how we know what we know about turfgrass science. So am I. That's something that's one of my small little side interests is psychology, I guess. How do we know? How do we know what we know? If we don't know, where do we go find the information? If you're given information, how do you know to trust it? What kind of confidence should you have in it? Yeah, so all those sorts of topics are what we go over. So welcome, everybody. It's going to be a fun show. I see a lot of people already here. Super TA and Gray Fox, Andrew Burris, Mike Conroy, Jeremy Bosch. I go down all the names. I'm going to forget somebody. Someone's going to feel like they're left out. I apologize. Maybe I shouldn't do this. I don't know. But Mark F., who's a new member. Welcome, Mark, to the membership. That reminds me, I just put some photos of my stuff I was doing today. By the way, I might look red on camera. It's because I'm sunburned. I've been outside all day. And doing some fun stuff in the lawn. But anyway, I put some photos of my own lawn on the community tab. For some reason, people are interested in knowing what my lawn looks like. I don't know why. But if you're a member, you can see what it looks like. So I put it under the members only tab. I tell you what, you put a video up of someone breaking the law and people get a little riled up. People get a little hot. I like the arguments. They're interesting to me. Show me your lawn. What does your lawn look like? What if I lived on a houseboat? Does that make the information any less accurate? Doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe I live in an apartment in New York City. The information is still accurate. It's at least the same information. You should still have the same confidence in the information, regardless of where I live. It's strange to me why people would say that. I decided to put, I don't really take pictures of my lawn, and I just have an average lawn, as you all have seen, and you've heard me say on the channel before. I just have an average lawn, nothing special about it. But if you want to see it, you got to be a member. So I think for people who are contributing to the channel, if they want to see it, they're more than welcome to see it. But anyway, so it's been fun reading some of the comments. I've actually seen some I'm actually very proud and pleased to see some of the replies from you all. Not just with this last week's videos, but before I don't really encourage you to engage with anybody if you don't want to, but some of the replies have been very thoughtful and have used some critical thinking skills to reply to some of the comments that are less than flattering. And it's good. It's good to see that, you know, when you engage with someone in a discourse, in order to have a civil discourse, I mean, you can't call them stupid. You can't call them names. I mean, that's a good way to make an enemy, right? So in order to have a civil discourse, we have to engage in some sort of civil conversation, and well, that's redundant, but to have respect for the person and talk about the content rather than the person. And that's what I try to do. I have no interest in criticizing people as people, but I, as you have heard many times before, I am going to fiercely attack truth claims. There's no reason why we shouldn't. Those are not off limits. Beliefs are not off limits. You don't need to respect someone's truth claim or someone's advertising. Respect them as a human, but not their claims. So that's what we do. That's what I do, I should say. We have a lot to get to. So we're almost up to 60 members. We have 1,400 something subscribers. It's around 100 a week we're gaining. So, I mean, like I said last time, we're gaining momentum, and it's a lot of what you all do, chatting and liking the videos and coming and showing up and all that stuff. So I really appreciate everything you all are doing and in support of the channel. So real quick, I am trying to figure out what's going on with the advertisement on the show. I think I put it on the least amount of advertisement, but I've heard in the chat as well as sometimes when I load videos, it seems like there's an inordinate amount of breaks, like one every 8 or 10 minutes or something. That seems excessive. I've put it on the lowest as far as I know. Well, besides no advertising, as far as I know, it's on its lowest. So if the advertising or the breaks or the, you know, all these things are becoming cumbersome or annoying, let me know and I'll look into it. I don't really know what I would do, but if you all know how to limit some of the advertising, if it's so much that it actually becomes a little annoying, let me know, please. It's not my intent to do that at all. So, okay. Tonight we have an article and we have a couple of videos and it's going to be interesting. I'm not going to tiptoe around it. I mean, there's people, for some reason, I get this impression that people, some listeners or viewers think that I'm attacking the person or the people, like, oh, you really don't like that person, or you really are in for it with this person or whatever. I don't even know these people. I don't even know them at all. I'm talking about their claims, and it goes across any platform. For example, generally I'll show videos or marketing things or whatever, but I've, before, you can go back and look, and I've heavily critiqued articles. In some cases, I end up having a conversation with the author face to face when I wasn't expecting it. They weren't real pleased with that. But, you know, if the article is junk, I'll tell you it's junk. I mean, but it has nothing to do with the authors. In terms of them being a person or a human, I respect them as a person. They just happen to write a junk article, you know? And so I don't really see the difference between critiquing a claim in an article and critiquing a claim in a YouTube video. But it please separate that out, you know, between the claim and the person making the claim. I have no interest in, you know, attacking a person. That makes no sense to me. But let's get into it. I'm going to show the videos at the end. For those who are interested, we do have a new Turf Thought at the end, followed by a band that I saw in, I want to say they were in Orlando. I'm going to say like 2002 or one or something along. I don't remember exactly when, but they really only had one big hit, but it's a really good hit. So look forward to that later. But welcome Elevated Lawnscapes and Mark F. Welcome. Thank you for your membership, James Petty Sr. All you guys, thank you so much. No worries. Said Reed Grevin says, no worries on ads. I'll gladly sit through a Tom Brady Hurts ad for Dr. S's content, even as a Falcons fan. Tom Brady's one of the Hurts ads on the show. Who knows? Maybe they just a random thing that comes in. It's really hard. I mean, I did not like Tom Brady in 2001 and 2 and 3. And it's like, ugh, whatever. But it's hard to kind of deny in terms of his greatness. I mean, at this point, let's be honest. I mean, he's the greatest quarterback ever. Good grief. I mean, he leaves and still wins the championship, and now Belichick can't even get a job. Anyway, whatever. I'll talk about the NFL later. Let's get into the article, and then I'll show some videos at the end and kind of go through those and that are also involved with this article. So we've been going over biostimulants. For those who are new to the channel or just tuning in, this whole month is about biostimulants. I only have 3 or 4 more episodes left on biostimulants before we go into May. And again, for those who might be new, I generally go over a topic for about a month and then I'll go to another topic. And next month is going to be Mental Awareness Month. I'll be going over mental things and, you know, health and autism and, you know, depression and even things like mental arguments and flaws and reasoning and things like that. A little bit more psychological content and how it relates to turf grass and how it might be useful to you and so forth. But let's get to the scoreboard. I've been keeping a scoreboard on humic acid or on biostimulants. And what we find is we've gone over, it looks like 5 articles so far this month. 4 of them had been in the field. 1 was in the greenhouse. So we've gone over articles that included seaweed extract, humic acids, microbial inoculants, as well as some other humic acids and so forth. We discussed it on Bermuda grass, on bent grass, and tonight's going to be on Kentucky bluegrass. The four that we've shown so far in the field have reported essentially no benefit to using seaweed extract or humic acid or microbial inoculants on Bermuda grass or bent grass in the field. The one that I had on Wednesday afternoon, actually, we had a conversation with Dr. Irvin from the University of Delaware, and he published a paper that was conducted in the greenhouse on humic acid and seaweed extract, and they showed positive responses, not just internal to the plant. So I would deem that as a means to the end, right? Means that we don't really necessarily care about. But he also published the end being turf quality or some beneficial response in the turf grass, and they showed a benefit. Okay, it was specific to droughts. That turf grass, the bent grass, in his study was stressed as a result of drought, and the benefit occurred about a week or so into the drought cycle, and then continued for the remainder of the drought cycle out to 28 days, and there was a benefit. Resulting from the application of humic acid and seaweed extract to bent grass under drought conditions in the greenhouse. So that's one paper that we've shown that concluded there was a positive benefit to some of these biostimulants. And then tonight's article is going to be humic acid or humic coatings that then claim to be converted into humic acids on Kentucky bluegrass in the field. Okay, so that's the scoreboard. We'll have three or four more before the end of the month on here. And for the most part, it's going to look basically like it looks now. Greenhouses generally show a response, and field generally is not so responsive. Oh, there you go. There's my wife in the chat. She's been popping in lately, so that's nice to see her. Okay, let's get to the paper, and I'm going to get through this fairly quickly. It's fairly a straightforward paper, and I will say that before we get started, I know these authors fairly well. I mean, I shouldn't say fairly well. I know them. I've spoken to them at meetings, and I've heard them speak and so forth. They've published better papers than this. I'll just say that. And as we get through it, I've read through this paper. I've only read it maybe four or five times, but something always sort of didn't sit well as I was reading it, and it just the numbers and the verbiage just didn't really sit well with me for some reason. I can't really explain it. It just, some of the stuff that was said didn't seem to really match. And then some things that were said weren't even investigated. There's just some things that just didn't line up. And I didn't really know, I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And then today I realized why. So, and I'll show you that at the end. So it's very important at the end. So let's get to it. The name, the title of today's paper, if I can get all my stuff ready here. The title of today's paper is Plant Available Soil Nitrogen Fluxes and Turf Grass Quality of Kentucky Bluegrass Fertilized with Humic Substances. And this was published in our top journal, Crop Science, in 2021 by Lindsay, Tomes, McDaniel, and Christians. Now, we've had Nick on the channel, and AJ's at UF, and Adam Tomes is still at Iowa State, I guess. And I'm sorry, I don't know Marshall McDaniel. So let's get through it. The introduction is, he sets the stage as to what's going on and why it'd be interesting or useful to look into these humic substances in the introduction. Okay. Turf grass requires frequent and larger applications of nitrogen compared with other nutrients because it is typically the most important nutrient for growth and quality. I mean, that's true, but that's true with any plant you're trying to grow. I mean, beyond its natural capacity, but anyway, capability. However, the application of nitrogen fertilizers should be synchronized with plant requirements and uptake to avoid excess and subsequent losses that cause adverse environmental impacts. So you see what I'm saying? I mean, this isn't me being picky or anything. It's just like when you use words in the scientific literature, like cause, it's like, that's like kind of sits. I mean, I'm just not real comfortable with that word because, as I've mentioned before, even my backdoor neighbor is a pulmonologist, and even he wouldn't say smoking causes lung cancer. As crazy as that might sound, smoking is a risk factor for lung cancer, but we can't say it causes lung cancer because Keith Richards is still smoking cigarettes till he's 80 something years old, and he's still perfectly fine apparently. And other people smoke a lot of cigarettes and they don't have lung cancer. So when we use the word cause, you know, subsequent losses that cause environmental impacts, it's like, I mean, it's not me being pedantic. It's just me being like, it's just not real comfortable. That just doesn't seem to be, I don't know. I'll give you an example. That's just an example of what I mean when I'm reading through this. And it just wasn't sitting well with me. Just like, it's just a little bit uncomfortable to say that. Anyway, management strategies to reduce nitrogen loss include optimized irrigation strategies, improved fertilizer recommendations and application timings, and using enhanced efficiency fertilizers. For a fertilizer to be accepted as an enhanced efficiency fertilizer, it must enhance or improve nutrient use efficiency and decrease nutrient loss to the environment. So, at the end of this paper, the authors are going to conclude that polymer-coated, human-coated urea should be categorized as an enhanced efficiency fertilizer. Okay. But they state the requirement by APCO right here. It must enhance or improve nutrient use efficiency. And you'll see the results and what they did. And I don't see that anywhere in the paper. And then the next one is, and decrease nutrient loss to the environment. So we're talking things like volatilization, leaching, runoff, denitrification, these sorts of losses. And they didn't measure that either. So I'm like, well, then how did you conclude that it should be an enhanced efficiency fertilizer if that is if you're defining that as the criteria, and then you don't measure that? How then are you concluding that it meets the criteria? That's what I'm saying. It just didn't sit well. And you'll see at the end. I'll bring this all together at the end. I've already highlighted it so I don't forget. Enhanced efficiency fertilizers and humic substances have been used on turf grasses to provide nutrients, improve biological soil health. That's certainly open to, in terms of humic substances, that's not a slam dunk statement. Certainly enhanced efficiency fertilizers, you can make that argument. And one could make an argument with humic substances, but it's certainly not a consensus in the scientific community. And reduce environmental impact of fertilizer applications. And again, humic substances have not been shown to consistently do that to the point where there is an agreement among scientists that is probably going to happen. So anyway, we continue. The main goal of this study was to determine if humic substances incorporated with fertilizers could be classified as an enhanced efficiency fertilizer. So that right there, it states it right there. So if in the introduction it says, to be accepted, it must do this and this. And then in the goal of the study, it says it was to determine if it meets enhanced efficiency fertilizer standards. You would think that that's what they would measure. So it just didn't seem strange to me. Anyway, to determine this, the field-based study had two main objectives. To determine if incorporating humic substances will increase the plant available nitrogen collected on in ion exchange membranes over a growing season. And to determine if the nitrogen release curves are the slow release, and to determine nitrogen release curves. So nitrogen release curves aren't going to do anything in terms of nitrogen use efficiency, because the nitrogen use efficiency has to be measured through the plant uptake. And then loss to the environment, that's not going to do anything loss to the environment, because you're not measuring leaching or runoff or volatilization or any of that. So Well, it is what it is. The hypothesis, or we hypothesize, that the humic fertilizers will perform equal or better in terms of providing plant available nitrogen and provide controlled or slow release properties compared to known enhanced efficiency fertilizers. Now, I haven't worked with AFCO in quite a while, 4 or 5 years. And it says, they say right there, they're going to do it compared to other known enhanced efficiency fertilizers. Now, I guess I could pull it off the bookshelf, but I can tell you what it says. In the AFCO handbook, it doesn't say in order to be classified enhanced efficiency as a enhanced efficiency fertilizer, it must be compared to another one. It says specifically it must be compared to a soluble reference product. So urea. So you would use urea, and then you would compare the results of straight urea with the results of a polymer-coated urea or polymer-coated, human-coated urea or whatever. So again, it's just like number three. It's just not sitting well. There's all these little things that are in my mind that are just not lining up right? About the setup of the introduction. It just doesn't seem to always sit well with me. So let's get into materials and methods. Field experiments were initiated in April 2019 at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, and were concluded in November 2020. So it was a two-year study. The experimental site was unique Kentucky bluegrass grown on native soil. Now, the other paper went over last Thursday, I guess it was last Thursday, was on a putting green, creeping bentgrass, at the same location by the same authors. And they didn't see that, they didn't find really any benefit to them. And now they're in the field with Kentucky bluegrass. So we have one setting with bentgrass on a putting green, sand-based putting green, and we have this one going on in native soil. Just so I don't have to come back to it, these are the treatments that they had in the identification and the size and everything. They had humic-coated urea, and they had polymer-coated humic-coated urea. And then they used urea with this humic dispersing granules. Now I'm going to have a video at the end that talks about these humic dispersing granules. And I'm going to have a video at the end that talks about, I believe it's polymer-coated humic-coated urea. It might be the other one, though. And then they used polymer-coated sulfur-coated urea and then stabilized nitrogen, which was diazandiamide, and MBPT was the components of the stabilized nitrogen. And they also had urea and a non-treated turf grass, okay? And just for the reference at the end of on the videos, just so we're all on the same page, you'll notice here the size guide number, which is a measure of the uniformity. It's not uniformity, but it's a measure of the average particle size of the fertilizer. You'll notice urea is 200. All the rest of these are 220 and 200. Those are all very close. 215, 220, 200. Okay, those are all very close in size. So like for a greens grade, you'd be looking at something like less than 100. So the lower the number, the smaller particle. And then for like fairway grade, you'd be looking north of 240, maybe even 260 for like fairway or home lawns would be like 240 or greater. These are in the neighborhood of home lawn, a little bit less particle size than home lawn size particles. They're all the same. That's the point, essentially. Okay. Just so you can see it. Sorry, I may have not had that on the screen. The Kentucky bluegrass was maintained at 3 inches of using a rotary mower cut 3 times a week. That's okay. Clippings were returned to the site and irrigation was applied as needed to provide 1 inch of water weekly when rain was not sufficient. So again, here you have another group talking about how they managed water. And again, they're talking about applying water in a manner that provides just about 1 inch a week during the growing season. And if it rains 1/2 inch, then they're only going to apply about 1/2 inch. So they try to keep that number about the same, about 1 inch of water total, whether it's from rainfall or from irrigation. And water is very important. And they mention it here. Turfgrass stand was established before 2015. It did not receive any fertilization for 3 years prior to starting the experiment. Okay. Two complementary side-by-side experiments were conducted to determine, one, the cumulative inorganic nitrogen captured on ion exchange membranes over a growing season, and two, the nitrogen release curve of the fertilizer treatments. Now, the treatments, I just went over the treatments, so I'm not going to go over it again, but here's the rates down here. The fertilizer treatments were applied at 1 pound of nitrogen And the humic dispersible granule was applied like around 0.9 pounds of product. Okay. Or a little less than a pound of product per 1,000 square feet. Fertilizer treatments were applied at the end of April in 2019 and at the end of May in 2020 using a wooden box. No, didn't matter. Okay. Okay, turfgrass quality was on 1 to 9 with 6 as acceptable, and they were taken every 2 weeks. Digital image was collected, and the DGCI, which is dark green color index, was determined from the digital images. That's usually done on like a light box, which is a box that goes over the plots, has lights inside it, blocks out all light. The camera sits up top, and they take pictures so that it's all the light is exactly the same for photo to photo. That's, anyway, probably more information you want to know. Total plant available inorganic nitrogen captured on ion exchange membrane. Using techniques described by McDaniel in 2014, total inorganic nitrogen and ammonium were determined by using the ion exchange membrane. One anion and cation exchange membrane was randomly placed within each plot. The dimensions were 2 by 4 centimeters. So that's how they did it. There's a little packet. It looks like a little packet, little membrane they put in the plot. And they'll put it in the plot, and then they remove it. A fishing line was attached to a nail through a punch hole in the ion exchange membrane for ease of relocation, and the membrane were placed vertically, and they explain it, so they take them out. So basically, it's exchanging ions or whatever other ion is in the soil, and that's it's a way of measuring how much was released or how much is solubilized, I suppose, in the soil using that method. Not a fan of that method, to be frank, nor am I fan of suction cup lysimeters, which I'll go into at some point, I guess. Okay, so nitrogen released from fertilizer. So if you've never seen this before, a meshed bag, if you can envision like a tea bag or thereabouts, it's not a tea bag, but about the size and the permeability of a tea bag or the porosity of a tea bag. Oftentimes fertilizer or the release of fertilizers in the field are measured in bags like that, where you'll have bags laying on the soil, or maybe they're slightly buried in the soil, and you'll have a number of them, and you'll weigh the particles and the fertilizer going in, and then you'll put them out, and then you have one bag for each time period that you're going to remove it. So let's say you're doing 4 reps and you're doing 5 time levels, you're going to have 20 bags for each nitrogen product, and because you're going to remove 4 of the bags on week 1 and 4 of the bags on week 2 and so forth, and then you'll prep it afterwards and clean it and dry it. And then you'll measure your weight again, and you'll, through the loss of the substrate in the by weight, you'll determine how much of the nitrogen was actually released over time. And that's what they did. Okay. I'm not going to just explain it, but that's, I'm not going to explain it any further. That's what they did. Okay. Very common. Statistical analysis. So I'm not going to talk about the statistical analysis, but they pulled a lot of things by years because there was no interaction. Fertilizer treat, and that's something that kind of, whatever. I'm not going to, it's too detailed. Fertilizer treatments had a significant effect on turfgrass visual quality ratings. Okay. So I'm going to show all the results. Well, almost all the results in the PowerPoint. Okay. Which I have open here, I think. I believe here. Yeah. So, and I'm going to show some in the tables and some on the PowerPoint. Let me go to the PowerPoint. Now, this is the visual quality that was pulled over years. And for those listening, we're looking at a line graph that has all the treatments as individual lines. And then we're looking at on the x-axis, the weeks after initial treatment. And on the y-axis, we have visual quality from 1 to 9. But this has been truncated to show only from 4 to 9. Which, again, is whatever. It's a little bit annoying, but it is what it is. Okay. So the non-treated floats between 5.5 and 6. And maybe 6.5, the non-treated, for between 0 and 20, 27, 28 weeks out. So the non-treated is marginally acceptable, mostly unacceptable, but occasionally it's acceptable. So the non-treated separates out from pretty much every other line for the most part, except for at the very end and the very beginning where it says NS here. It separates out from all the other products. And we have the humic coated and polyhumic coated and urea plus the dispersible granules and polycoated, sulfur coated urea and stabilized nitrogen and urea. Now, remember, they applied this once at 1 pound at the end of April and one again the next year at the end of May. All right. First of all, let me just point out for the umpteenth time how long the turf response occurs following the application of just straight urea. I had an article on this myself. I don't know. I've shown two or three other articles on this. And here's another article that shows the response to urea, which is this open circle, last. And when I say last, I mean above acceptable limits or different from the non-treated turf. For 24 weeks, 4 months. Is that right? 24 weeks? It's longer than that. Okay. It's basically the entire season, 6 months. That's how long this Kentucky bluegrass responded to 1 pound of straight urea on native soil. So, you know, it's not just my opinion. I mean, the data is substantial on this issue when it comes to the value of applying urea properly, any nitrogen source properly. Urea, occasionally ammonium sulfate, you need some of that occasionally if you have the right conditions, or, you know, you need some extra sulfur or whatever, the pH is too high. But urea lasts a very long time. And the quality was acceptable, and it was greater than non-treated turf. Now, there were occasions at the end where the turf response was greater when the humic-coated and the sulfur-coated and all these other things, this was here at the very end here, I think it was on 24, right in here, was where some of these treatments, particularly the sulfur-coated urea, it's hard to see because they don't show the numbers, they just show the line graph, separated out. In other words, the urea quality, the turf grass quality from urea was less than the turf grass response from sulfur-coated urea at about 24 weeks out. The sulfur-coated urea was around 7, and the urea was around 6. It's a little greater than 6, so about a full point, okay? But other than that, urea was acceptable. For the most part, it was the same as everything else, okay? And it costs less. I don't know how many times I got to show it, but it's the same story over and over and over. Okay, now, they're going to show, or I'm going to show, the other table in the article. In fact, let me see if it's already up. There's a table in the article. No, I'm not going to do that. I already did it in the PowerPoint. So let me just go back to the PowerPoint. So that's the turf grass quality. They merged the years, and essentially, there was no difference between urea and all these other products, but there was a difference between these products and non-treated turf grass, of course. Okay, and urea didn't last a week, didn't last a month. The turf grass response didn't last 2 months or three. It lasted 5 months, 6 months, 24 weeks. Okay. So financially, and I wish people would do this more. I don't ever see it. I only know of one paper that's ever done it, where you look at, okay, the turf grass is about the same from all these products, but how much difference is it in price? Cost per acre, cost per 1,000 square feet. The difference is not 5%, guys and gals. Okay. The difference is, if you guys are here, I'm going to be here for another hour probably. So if somebody wants to look up the price of polymer-coated, humic-coated urea, and then from the same vendor, look up the price of urea, post it in the chat. It's not 5%. It's not 10%, 15%. It's substantially more. Bordering on half as much more, sometimes twice as much more. Now, certainly it's the case with some of the other polymer coats, for sure, it's twice as much more. But when it comes to the humic coated stuff, it's not going to be just a little bit more than urea. It's going to be enough to, in my view, not warrant the extra expense, because I'm not getting a concomitant benefit in return for that expense. Okay. Dave Clausen says, happy birthday. Wayne Esser, does someone in the chat know what Polyon from Harrell's is? I know what Polyon from Harrell's is. Bill Martin, VP. I'm a big fan. My brother put me on to watching. Oh, thanks, Bill Martin. Appreciate it. Okay, so now we're going to get to the next table. I'm going to show in bar charts on PowerPoint. This is the effect of treatments on green cover of Kentucky bluegrass in Ames, Iowa, and data were pulled over 2019-2020. So this was the number where they took, basically you take a light box and you measure the percentage of the area that registers at a certain threshold of greenness or greater. Okay, it gives you an objective measurement of the plot that is green. For those people that don't like subjective measurements, this is objective. And we see that we have humic-coated ureas, all the stuff on the x-axis, and green cover percentage on the y-axis. And we see that, indeed, among nitrogen sources, nothing differed. They were all 89 and 90% green cover. Urea was 89.6. All the other ones were all the same as that, except for non-treated, which was about 87% green cover. So all of them resulted in an increase in green cover compared to non-treated turf grass, but nothing differed from urea. So once again, why are we spending more money on this if we're not going to get some concomitant benefit or increase? Let's go to the next line. I'll show you the table where I pulled these data from if you want. Effective treatments on, oh, this isn't green cover. This is, I didn't change the title. This is DGCI. This should say DGCI. I didn't change it over here either. This is DGCI. Okay, so I have the units right, but I didn't change the title or the axis, sorry. So this is DGCI. So this is dark green color index. All right, so it's not a percentage of the plot. It's the magnitude of greenness, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. It goes from 0 to 1. And you'll see, once again, nothing differed at all, even from non-treated turf grass. So in the objective using the objective technique of light box and photos, there was nothing that resulted in an increase in DGCI relative to urea or non-treated turf grass. So again, we're paying a lot more money for humic-coated and polyhumic-coated and humic dry granules and sulfur-coated urea and even stabilized nitrogen, and we're not getting anything in return for it when it comes to green cover or DGCI or dark green color index. Okay. Now, what I want to do is I want to make sure that I'm so we're on the same page. This is where I pulled those data from. Table 2, for those watching. These are all the exact same numbers as what I just had in those graphs. I just put them into a graph form. And here's the chart that I showed. I just pulled it from the article. Okay. Now, what I want to do is I want to go. Let me see what the next. Oh. So the next thing is, you know, let me save that for the next. Hang on a second. Okay. I'm on the right page. Okay. So now this is the cumulative plant available inorganic nitrogen and ammonium captured on ion exchange membranes placed in Kentucky bluegrass grown in native soil. So what you'll see is on the left, you'll see the treatments. Okay. And then you'll see the months of May, June, July, August, September, October, November, and then the total. And this is pulled in 2019, 2020. So this is the little packets that are going in, the little membranes that are going in the plots and absorbing nitrate or inorganic nitrogen, nitrate and ammonium. They're absorbing it as the packets are releasing. I'm sorry, as the fertilizer is releasing, these packets are absorbing nitrate and ammonium. They take them out and they wash them off, clean them, and then they measure the nitrate and ammonium that were on those membranes as a measure of the release of the product. Okay, that's a little bit of a way of thinking about it. And I want to show that in May, remember April and May is when they applied these products. In May, there was no difference. Okay, in June, from any product, in May, there was no difference in any product. In June, when we look at urea, it was a 6.6 micrograms, and the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea was double that at 12.8, and it was statistically separated out. Okay, that was the only treatment that separated out in June. So what that's saying is there was more nitrate and ammonium retained on those membranes with the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea product than with any other product, including non-treated turf. So there was more nitrate and ammonium in June. But now let's look at July, at August, at September, nothing. No difference in July, no difference in August, no difference in September. There was no difference between urea and any of the other products in October, and there was no difference in November among any product, none. So we had one little blip on the radar in June where the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea resulted in greater nitrogen and ammonium on the membranes, even from urea, And nothing happened in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the 7 months measured. There was no difference. Meaning that there was the same amount of nitrate and ammonium in the soil. By buying and applying all these products, these more expensive products, as there was from straight urea. Okay, now they do total it up at the end. All this total up, when you accumulate it all at the end, there's a difference. But there was 30 micrograms from the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea, and 23 from urea. So if you add it all up, there might be a difference there. But month to month, there was no difference other than the month of June, the month immediately following the application of the products. So from when I'm looking at this, I'm going, well, I'm not seeing any further release in July or August or September or October or November. I'm not seeing some sort of prolonged release as measured by the ion exchange membrane. Okay. So it's not particularly compelling to me. You know, we already showed the turfgrass response and it was the same. There was no difference in quality. There's no difference in dark green color index. And there was no difference in green cover. So the turf grass isn't responding any different from these to these products as they are from just straight urea. Now we're looking at a measure of nitrogen in the soil over months, and we're not seeing a whole lot there either. Okay. I mean, we did see something in June for sure, but not a whole lot anywhere else. Okay, so I'm going to show, you know, I'm just going to show this here since I'm already here. I was going to show it in PowerPoint. I'm just going to show it here since we're already here. Now we're looking at the nitrogen release percentage in the days after application in line graph. So this was the mesh bags. Okay, so these are the fertilizer treatments were applied in the mesh bags. Now remember, they did the membranes as a measure of absorbing what was out in the soil out. And they did the mesh bags and they just weighed it, put them in the bags, let it release, and then removed a bag, and so forth, and then measured what was remaining in the bag after so many weeks, okay? And in the mesh bag, we see the polymer-coated, sulfur-coated urea. The curve is very consistent, and, you know, at about 60 days, it's all gone. And then in 2019, we see the release from polymer-coated, humic-coated urea be lower at the beginning, and then it continues to release out to about 150 days. Now, this might look odd to someone who, if you're not familiar with how to read these, or you're not familiar seeing release curves, this might look, This might look odd where it's not quite so linear, but this is actually what you're looking for if you're wanting to develop a slow release material. You're wanting this line to do this. A very consistent sort of slower release from the substrate. That's what you would like to see. So they get a mark in the wind box for slowing it down more in 2019. In 2020, it didn't respond the same way, but it was more similar to the sulfur coated. But in any case, it clearly shows that there was some slowing of the release using the mesh bag technique. Okay. But, okay. AFCO, at least unless they change the rules, AFCO requires that you measure this relative to a reference soluble material if you're going to have it classified. If you want an official classification, you need to measure this to a reference soluble material, which obviously urea would look like this, straight across at the top. The one day, it would release all of its nitrogen, and it would be a straight red line. But you can't just assume that if you're going to go to AFCO. You know, you actually have to do that if you want your product categorized as a slow release or enhanced efficiency product. And again, unless they change the rules, maybe they change the policies, but that's what I'm familiar with and that's what I'm used to. So they're comparing against another slow release, which is fine if you just want to know what's going to happen. But if you want AFCO to register it, then you need to just stick some urea in there. It's cheap. And you're going to go, well, it's all going to release. Yeah, I know it's all going to release. And so does AFCO, but you still got to do it. Okay, so that they didn't do that. It's just strange. Okay, anyway, we keep going. Overall, fertilizer treatments, including enhanced efficiency fertilizers and the addition of humic substances, had similar turfgrass quality compared with urea and greater quality than the non-treated control. So they say right there, read between the lines, folks. There's no advantage in terms of turf quality under these conditions using these products to applying, you know, the humic-coated products compared to just straight urea. There's no advantage in terms of turf quality. Okay. Total plant available inorganic N, as captured by the ion exchange membranes, did not correlate with turf grass quality. And that's one reason why I've said many, many times, I'm more interested in the end than the means to the end. When they measure the inorganic N and the organic N and measure plant substrates and hormones and all that stuff, all those are means to an end. And I'm interested in that as a scientist. But I'm not interested in that as a practitioner or a pragmatic, to provide pragmatic recommendations. Okay, what I want to know is what my clients care about, and that's turf quality, turf color, you know, fall color retention, spring color, green up, all these things, okay? The things that, you know, Miss Jones cares about and Coach Bob cares about, all those things, okay? And they say right here, it did not correlate. They measured it in the soil. They saw the turf grass quality. There was no correlation between the two. Only polymer-coated, humic-coated urea resulted in greater total inorganic N concentration compared with the non-treated control N urea. That was the total at the end, which could be due to the extended N release period or via microbial stimulation from humic substances and enhanced net mineralization. That is a huge presupposition. Could be due to via microbial stimulation. At the end, they're going to make a claim that is going to be refuted by their own data. So, call your buddies and text them if you want to see Travis go after scientific claims in a scientific article and refute it using their own scientific data. It's going to happen in about 5 minutes. Okay. The polymer-coated, humic-coated urea had the longest nitrogen release period, allowing for the longest duration of plant-available nitrogen to be captured on the ion exchange membrane. That's what I'm saying when it just doesn't seem to sit well. It says they're promoting polymer-coated, humic-coated urea, saying at greater total and it released longer. But I just showed you, there really wasn't much going on. There was this one June, and if that's what they say, then so be it. But all the rest of the months were the same as just straight urea. Okay. And in some cases, it was the same as non-treated. Actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the month, 5 of the 7 months, there was the same amount of nitrate and ammonium as there was just from non-treated turf grass. So it's just like, I'm not saying what they're saying is not true. It's just like, I don't understand. It just doesn't seem, there's a little bit there, but it doesn't seem to be enough there to really make any firm conclusions. I guess that's what I'm saying. And I feel that the conclusions are a little bit too firm in favor of this particular product. This polymer-coated, humic-coated urea. And I was just, man, that just doesn't, I don't know. Okay. I only have 4 little tiny sentences left. Might take a little bit to get through it, but that's, and then we'll be done with this and we'll go into the videos. Okay, so I'm not sure how to broach this topic other than to say, just because it's written in a scientific publication doesn't make it true. Okay. Science is not particularly interested in determining what is true. That's what I said. Or as a scientist, I'm not interested necessarily in determining this is true. What I'm interested in what scientists do, are we build models. We build scientific models, and models are the result of numerous papers. Okay. And those models will generally try to explain reality. Okay. In general, those models are more likely to be true than some other model because the model is always shifting based upon the information that comes in, the new data and the new evidence that comes in. So we're interested in building models. Scientists are. That's what we do. This particular publication contributes to the model. But just because it's in this publication doesn't make it true. Just because I write something in a publication doesn't make it true. I mean, we try to. I mean, I try to make sure everything's accurate. That's what we strive to do that. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's the case. Okay. So I'm saying that when I read the next part, I'm going to give you a window into my thought process when I read stuff like this. Okay. The next sentence says this. Furthermore, polymer-coated, humic-coated urea was found to increase microbial activity by 30% and 68%, and the amount of potential nitrogen mineralization by 5% and 59% compared with urea and the non-treated control, respectively, by Lindsay, 2021. It's a different publication. Now, when I read this, I've read a lot of this work, and I don't remember that. I do not remember that ever in anything I've ever read. And so when I read, now I'm highlighted in purple, so it's easy to stand out, but this isn't highlighted. It's not like it's a big standout. You can obviously see that there's a concern. I'm reading it and I'm just going, I don't recall that. Okay. And I certainly don't recall it well enough to say it with such, you know, confidence in a, we're approaching the conclusions here, right? So what I did, and you'll see here, it says Lindsay 2021, and then the reason they do this is they cite it, and you can go to the references, and you can go down to the references, and that's what I do. I went down to the references, and I went down to Lindsay 2021, which is this article right here, and it says, evaluation of humic fertilizers applied at full and reduced nitrogen rates on Kentucky bluegrass quality and soil health. And it says, it is published in Agronomy, and it has the citation. You can click on it. You can go there. Now, I've already read that paper, okay? And I don't recall that in that paper. Now, you might not have prior knowledge. I mean, you may, I don't know. Maybe you have 10 times more knowledge than I do. I mean, that's fine. But I'm assuming the average person probably has not read that paper. And so when you read the sentence up at the top where it has this purple, you know, purple highlighted that I've highlighted, and it says all this 30% and 68% increase, I'm like, holy cow. I don't remember anywhere near that at all. I don't remember any at all, much less 68%. So I went and pulled that paper because I wanted to know more about this. This is my thought process. I'm like, I don't remember that being the case. But I don't recall. So I'm going to go pull that paper and see if that's true. See if that's what they concluded. Because this paper, Lindsay 2021, they're citing is the same authors. So I went and pulled that paper. Okay. And in that paper, I'll just bring it up here. And this is the paper in Agronomy. Now, this journal is by far, well, no, I shouldn't say by far. It is Agronomy. This is a very well-known predatory journal in agronomy. I got suckered in to reviewing papers for this journal because as a scientist, sometimes you get emails and they'll say, would you please, you know, review this article if you accept, da, 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 da. And it said Agronomy. And one of our main journals is Agronomy Journal. That's a top-tier journal in my world. And it said Agronomy. I'm like, okay, I read the title. This was years ago. I read the title. I'm like, oh, okay, it's Agronomy. So I clicked on it and I pulled it up and I was like, wait, this isn't Agronomy Journal. This is Agronomy. And it's a horrible journal. It's a predatory junk journal. That does in no way mean that the articles in the journal are bad. But having reviewed many, many articles as a reviewer for this journal, and I've provided my input, and sometimes I accept the article with major revisions, and sometimes I just fully reject the article because it's so bad. Even the articles that get rejected still get published. Okay, and that sometimes that happens, even with crop science. Some reviewers will accept it, one might reject it, and it'll still get in, no problem. But the articles are so bad that my confidence in this journal, in the articles in this journal, or I'm already very, very high on the skepticism scale. I already got my guard up with any article in this journal because I know they publish junk. Okay. So I'm saying that I'll eventually get into this journal. I'll read this article eventually. I'm not going to read it tonight. But what they're saying, I'm just letting you know, this is what my thought process is. Like, you're citing something with such assertion, with such confidence, and you're citing it from a crap journal. I'm like, okay, something doesn't line up. So if you go through here and you go all the way down, I'm not going to read the article. I'm just going to go all the way down to the point of interest for this article tonight. You go all the way down to table 6 in this other article. Now, remember what they stated here was that increased microbial activity by 30% and 68% compared to urea and non-treated control. So if you go in here and you pull up this and you run the numbers on table 6, they're talking about this comparison here. and this comparison here. Okay, that's that comparison. And then they say 5 and 59% of potential nitrogen mineralization. So potential mineralizable nitrogen is right over here, and they're making this comparison, okay? This comparison here. For those watching, I'm comparing the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea to urea, and the polymer-coated, humic-coated urea to the non-treated turf in this other journal of potentially mineralizable carbon and potentially mineralizable nitrogen. And if you run the math on that, it's going to match up exactly to 30% and 68% and 5% and 59%. So all that matches up exactly. So that's where they're pulling it from. Okay. However, look at the LSD, and what the LSD says is that these two don't differ. The potentially mineralizable carbon from polymer-coated, humic-coated urea and from urea don't differ at all. And the same thing holds true for potentially mineralizable nitrogen. These two don't differ. The LSD is 3.1, the polymer-coated, humic-coated is 14, and the urea is 13.3. So this is the way, oftentimes, how these assertions get smuggled in to legitimate journals, is that they'll say things like 30% increase and 68% increase. It was found that there was an increase. There was no increase. Numerically, they're showing a numerical increase, but there's no statistical difference between those two. So the reason we can't do that is because if you're going to do that, I can do the same on the other end. I can say, oh, well, there was a 30% reduction on these, and there was a 50% reduction on this product, and so forth. When meanwhile, there was no statistical difference at all. I can say the same on many, many, many other publications that would be refute a lot of claims or a lot of these comparisons, but there was no statistical difference, so I don't say there was a difference. Okay. I can't do that as a scientist. And what I'm saying in this article is they did that, and you can't do that. Okay, you can't say there's a 68% increase here, which is what I have highlighted here, when you do the math and there's no difference. Okay, in between the urea. I'm talking differences between urea and the polymer-coated urea. Okay. So, strike four, strike five in my mind when I'm reading this article. I'm like, what? And there's already two or three or four things that have occurred while I'm reading it. And now this pops up and I'm going, what in the world is going on here? So now my sensitivity to the information is super, super sensitive. Now I'm like, man, I'm hypersensitive to anything that comes up because I'm not comfortable. Because a lot of the information coming through here doesn't seem to match. Okay, if you're going to start saying things that are different, even though they're statistically they're not, when it benefits your product, then it gives me the opportunity to say they're different, even though statistically they're not, when it doesn't benefit your product. And I don't do that, and neither should any other scientist. Okay? We continue. As hypothesized, polymer-coated, humic-coated urea fits the criteria of an enhanced efficiency fertilizer, which is a fertilizer that improves plant nutrient availability. I don't get that. While decreasing potential nutrient losses to the environment. So they reworded. This is called an equivocation fallacy. They reworded what was up here at the top when they correctly cited what APCO requires. APCO requires this. Improved nutrient use efficiency, which is a function of the plant uptake, which they did measure, and decreased nutrient losses to the environment. Decreased losses to the environment, which requires a measurement of leaching or runoff or something else. They didn't measure that, but they reworded it in a way that seems, fertilizer that improves plant nutrient availability. I didn't see anything that they measured that at all. And while decreasing potential nutrient losses to the environment, they didn't measure that at all. I don't get it. And it says potentially polymer-coated, humic-coated urea both increased soil plant available in and was released slowly. I mean, it's very likely that it was released slowly. I mean, they didn't include a reference soluble material, but I mean, all they had to do is do that and it would probably be the same exact result. So, I mean, I'm inclined to give them that, but it just didn't seem to fit well. Okay. Additionally, slow release, this again, okay, So conclusions in a periodical, conclusions in the newspaper, conclusions in your own mind, can be whatever they want to be, okay? In a scientific paper, conclusions are reserved to conclude what was found within the boundaries of the results. That's it. Doesn't need to be five paragraphs. It can be straight to the point, okay? Nowhere is it really allowed in the conclusions of a scientific, of a reputable scientific article and journal, where you can simply pontificate and speculate as to what may or may not happen with some measurement that you didn't even take, okay? You didn't even measure it in your study at all, and you're speculating on what may or may not happen, okay? That's not proper writing, proper scientific etiquette. So let's read this. Additionally, slow-release fertilizers and the addition of humic substances to fertilizers have the potential to decrease volatilization, which was not measured at all, and it can thus be speculated that polymer-coated, humic-coated urea would also lower nitrogen gas emissions. I have very little doubt that a polymer-coated anything with urea in it would result in a reduction in gaseous loss. I have very little doubt that that would actually happen. That'd probably happen, okay? But you didn't measure it, okay? So until you measure it, it has no business being in the conclusions. It's certainly not speculating what may or may not happen. And it seems to me that there's some, you know, smuggling in of information to shine a favorable light on this polymer-coated, humic-coated urea. And I'm not saying they did that intentionally or even did it at all. I'm just saying in my mind, that's what I'm thinking. Because there were so many little odd pieces to the paper. Okay. Humic fertilizers did not improve turf grass quality compared with fertilizers alone, but all fertilizer treatments had improved turf grass quality relative to the non-treated control and provided acceptable turf grass quality for the majority of the growing season. Now that is a conclusion, right? That's a conclusion. That's what they found. So I'm not going to miss it. I'm going to come back to this. Here's the sentence I just read. I'm going to come back. I'm not going anywhere. Elevated Lawnscapes. Thank you for your pro membership. There's a couple people I'm really jealous of. Okay. I'm just letting you know the way their voice is so compelling and just like, man, I wish I had that person's voice. And I can't remember if Elevated Lawnscapes, if you're the one that's in Louisville or not, or if that's another Elevated something, or I can't remember. I don't want to say anything because I don't want to be wrong, but you're welcome. Welcome to the membership. So I've read through the article, I've read through this two or three times, and it was only on the fourth or fifth time where I finally caught it. Finally caught like, okay, that's why all these sort of uncomfortable verbiage exists in the paper, right? And I may be wrong, but this sort of gave me some peace of mind as to my skepticism was justified. My concern was justified. So we go back to the paper. And nowadays, these papers are doing a much better job at this. You'll see in the acknowledgement, and they acknowledge some scientists and probably some grad students and postdocs and so forth. And it says the author would also like to thank the Andersons and the Iowa State Turfgrass Institute for funding this research. So polymer-coated, humic-coated urea is a proprietary product manufactured by the Andersons, distributed by the Andersons. And the Andersons funded the study, which they acknowledge. They say the Andersons paid for it. And so I'm like, okay, well, that explains a lot of it. But then I went up here and it says, conflict of interest statement. The authors declare no conflict of interest. Now, how in the world can an author have no conflict of interest when they're publishing data on a product funded by a company that owns the product? Now, you will see in the literature a paper of mine. Well, not mine. I was a co-author on it, where there's a no, it says conflict of interest, and it says authors declare no conflict of interest. But there was a conflict of interest because some of the other authors have some financial interest in some of the newer varieties of turfgrass. I told the authors, we got to put in a conflict of interest. We got to tell them that, you know, there's royalties involved here and you need to make sure that's clear. And they didn't put it in. But I have the emails. I told them, you got to put that in, and they didn't put it in. So I'm saying that I'm guilty of this as well, I guess. You know, it's on a paper of mine as well. So it's possible that they asked and they didn't get it put in is where I'm going with that. Okay. But any paper, here's that conflict of interest. Any paper, any research that is funded by a company, that's a lot. There's a lot of private industry money that goes on in our world. We have to pay the bills. We're human, and it is very difficult to separate out any bias that you have whenever you're funded by the company who's you're publishing their work on. It's very difficult. You're not a robot. Okay. You're a human and you're biased. We're all biased. Okay. So to me, that sort of made things a little clearer as to why there was such sort of strange verbiage. Well, the strange verbiage was in a paper published on products provided by and funded by the company, that the company that provided the products. Okay, so this paper was on there. So take it like you want to take it, however you want to take it. Okay, so that's all I have on that article. But I do have some more on polymer coated stuff. I'm gonna go to videos, a couple of videos, and I'll just leave that up. Okay, let's go to. Let's see, what do I want to do here? I want to go. I'm going to leave that up. I can close that. I'm going to leave this up. Okay. So now let's go to a little video. And there's two videos. It doesn't matter what order we do them in, really. Let's do this. And because I got to read this, and it's only 1 minute long, maybe a minute and a half. So there's some videos on humic coated ureas. And oops, that's not the right one. And I'm going to show some information. Now, this one doesn't have any dialogue, so I'm going to have to read what's on the screen, but I'll pause it as we go. But we're going to have some fun with it. The name of the video is called Introducing Humic Coated Urea, The Andersons, and it's by the Andersons Pro YouTube channel. Let's play this, and I think it should work. Again, I'm going to have to read everything. It says, black is the new green. Okay, humic-coated granules are an innovative nitrogen source featuring urea-humate fusion. This is a proprietary technology produced a cost-effective 4400 nitrogen granule. Now, I asked some people to pull up some pricing if you have pricing popping in the chat. But cost-effective is relative to whoever. I mean, it's not going to be cost-effective relative to urea. Urea is a 4600, and it's going to be less expensive per ton. So this is going to have less nitrogen in it and cost more per ton, though humic coated. So I don't know what they mean by cost effective, but I guess it's their take on it. Fine. Keep going. Okay. He's showing, there's a hand, a white glove, pouring in some of these granules in there, the black granules, and it says clean and dry, dust free, easy to handle, free flowing, and 100% soluble for use in liquid and dry applications. Now, my question is, how do any of those differ from urea? So we've already shown a paper that shows there's no difference in turf grass quality. We've shown more than one paper, but the paper tonight, there's no difference in turf quality for 24 weeks or whatever, 4 or 5 months. There was no difference in, well, we're going to get to that in a second. In this one, they're saying there's clean and dry. So is urea. Dust free. So is urea. Easy to handle, so is urea. And it's free-flowing, so is urea. 100% soluble, so is urea. Make sure you get the spray-grade urea. Don't get the coated urea, but, you know, it's still sprayable, okay? I'm going to turn this music down. We keep going. Analysis, 4400, coating... SGN 215. Now notice the SGN is 215, which is probably fine, but the SGN of urea is 200, 215, something like that. It's the same. Uniformity index is going to be the same with urea. Bulk density is going to be a little bit different, but none of that really affects anything. And now we go to sensible. This is sensible. The potassium humate coating works synergistically with urea to promote and enhance soil biology. Granules break down into humic acids and fulvic acids. This provides a rich carbon source. This provides a rich carbon source for maintaining and improving soil biology. Okay. Now, we already went over a paper a day or two ago, and the same paper, a couple days ago, where they measured soil biology as a result from this specific product. Okay. So on that, you'll see table 5 in this other article, the article went over the other day, it shows right here, potentially mineralizable carbon, potential mineralizable nitrogen, and there's no difference between this humic-coated urea and urea. In fact, there's no difference between that and just non-treated turf on the potentially mineralizable carbon. Then when you go to potentially mineralizable nitrogen, there's no difference between urea and any of these humic-coated products. Okay. So, you know, this is what I mean when you kind of had to have some sort of basic knowledge, because these claims are just not supported. There may be some sort of paper somewhere that says, yes, humic acids will do this, or fulvic acids will do this. That might be true, but I don't really care so much about that. I want to know about this particular product. If I'm going to buy it, I want to know what this product does. And this product's saying the same stuff, and the data that's in the literature certainly does not support it. Now we go to soluble and spreadable. They can be solubilized for spray applications and dry applied through typical dry spreading equipment. Same as urea, well suited for use on large turf applications. Same as urea, golf courses, tees, aprons, fairways, rough, same as urea. Other applications, sport turf, commercial and residential lawns, ornamentals, row crops, specialty crops, all this is the exact same as urea. There's no reason to be convinced so far that this product is any better or different than urea. Humic substances are recognized by most soil scientists and agronomists as the most important component of a healthy, fertile soil. I'm not going to argue that, but whatever. And then it says, enhance soil biology with the power of humic acid, humic-coated urea granules, enhance soil biology and chemistry, which improves nutrient availability. And we just showed you a paper. I can show you two other papers that provide refuting evidence to that. Not so much humic acids, right, or fulvic acids, but this is an equivocation fallacy where they're saying humic acids do this, so humic-coated ureas do this. Whoa, 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 whoa. You're comparing things that might not be the same. Okay. I think that you probably will find evidence in the literature that humic acids probably will have an effect on some of these things. I'm sure you can pull it up. But what does this particular product do relative to the claims that are being made? Those can be two different things. And what I've shown you using the literature on that specific product, there's no evidence to support that claim. And then it says, this in contrast to many other competitive products which keep nutrients available by suppressing biological processes. I don't know what they mean by that, but that's pretty much it. And then they go into a lot of stuff about showing how the product dissolves and all this other stuff, okay? So, I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and pick this stuff apart. Thank you, OG, upgrade your membership to Pro Level. Thanks so much. Appreciate your support. Thank you. It's easy for me to pick these things apart because I know the literature and whatever. And you might not. And that's why this channel exists, to help introduce people to literature and expose people to the literature and expose people how to go find the literature. And, you know, I know it takes a fair amount of effort to read through here and, you know, spend the time to determine whether or not your money's well spent. But I guess that's why the channel exists. I mean, there's just not a lot there on this specific product, humic-coated urea. But let's look at the other product that was in those papers was just a humic dry granule. Okay. That's different. This video is only 2 minutes and 24 seconds long, where the urea is not coated. It's just a product, a raw material itself that's completely dispersible. That was also included in these articles. Let's see what this next video has to say. And this one has audio, so I'll just play it.
The Andersen's Humic DG, the next generation of humic acid. Humic acid enhances the plant's ability to take in essential nutrients and improve soil structure.
Anytime, I'll just give you a word of wisdom right here, okay, guys and gals. Anytime somebody pulls out the whole improve soil structure line, there's a pretty good chance that they're incorrect, okay? It's not always the case, okay? There's clear cases to the contrary. But in order to measure that, I would bet that 90% of the people who claim that, I'd bet probably 99% of the people that make that claim have no idea how to even measure soil structure, much less determine whether or not that product actually improved it. So that's just a word of wisdom as you go through the rest of your career. Improve soil structure. Don't assume it's wrong. I mean, he might be right. He or she might be correct. I'm not saying they're incorrect. But it's certainly a red flag. And I'm thinking, I'm going to ask them some more questions about that. Because if that happens, it can be measured, okay? And it should be measured. But I doubt seriously whether or not they actually bothered measuring it. So therefore, I doubt seriously whether or not their product has actually ever been shown to do it. Here we go. Next one. Internet.
Humic DG utilizes patented technology to create uniform, spherical dispersing granules. These granules are biological, dispersible, spreadable, and blendable. While the majority of products on the market today offer strictly mineral-based humic substances, Humic DG provides both a mineral-based humate and a plant-based carbon source. Humic DG is comprised of four biological components. These components range from very soluble to completely insoluble in soil media and work together to provide a broad range of benefits.
Do whatever you want to do, Andersons, but you guys have enough money. You think you could hire an actor or somebody to do the voiceover instead of a computer, but I don't know, whatever. So we're talking about humic dry granules and talking about just its marketing. We're going to get somewhere real quick with this. Hang on.
The humic acid precursor portion of Humic DG provides a plant-based organic carbon source. Upon dispersion, the humic...
Plant-based organic carbon source. And let me just continue. I'll be here forever.
Humic acid precursor is transformed through soil biochemical reactions into readily available forms of humic and fulvic acids. This helps to chelate nutrients in the soil.
Ooh, I love that. So the claim is... The application of HDG, a humic dispersible granule, is going to help increase or help chelate elements in the soil, which, again, might happen. Show it to me. And then, even if you can show it to me, show me how that results in an increase in plant growth or color or something that we care about, right? Let's go.
Enhancing uptake of applied fertilizers and nutrients.
So enhancing uptake of fertilizers and applied nutrients. Again, we can measure that. Show it to me. Let's look at something. You know, show me that.
Working synergistically, Humic DG's range of biologically active plant and mineral-based organic carbon compounds enhance plant and soil health over an extended period of time. Competitor's dry humic acid product is dusty, non-uniform, containing up to 20% moisture, while Humic DG stays under 10% moisture.
Okay, I'm going
to DG
ahead.
Technology helps into thousands of to the plant. Spherical and dust-free granules allow for ease of handling and are used in many pieces of standard application technology.
Yeah, that might be all I want to talk about, actually.
Ultra-dry granules are engineered from spherical granules are easy. Of fertilizers.
Yeah, they just talk about.
Find out more.
Yeah, they just talk more about the actual product itself, which, how it's shaped and how it disperses, which I will give them credit. I mean, those products disperse nicely when they hit water. They don't stay around very long. They disperse nicely into the soil. That's for sure. But what I wanted to show was they talked all about this stuff and increases, you know, microbial activity and microbes in the soil increases, but through chelation increases nutrient availability and all this other stuff. Now we showed on the actual, on the supplementary file of the paper we did a couple weeks ago, we showed they had no effect on any nutrients. They were all the same. Mainly three nutrients were all the same except for sulfur because they added a gypsum in there. The HDG had no impact on any element in terms of a soil test. Okay, so it didn't do anything to the nutrients in terms of making them more plant available or more soluble in the soil. But let's look at another paper that shows the same dang thing. And that is this other junk paper, this agronomy journal. I shouldn't say junk paper. I meant junk journal. And it's from the agronomy journal, and it has HDG down here, humic dispersible granule, and it has phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, sulfur, zinc, PHCC, organic matter, soil moisture, and soil compaction. Okay. It has all these humic coated products, including HDG, which is not the coating. It's just actually the product that was in that commercial just then. And look at the lack of differences between all of these products and just non-treated turf grass. There was no difference in phosphorus, no difference in potassium, no difference in magnesium or calcium. There was difference in sulfate just because they applied a gypsum. No difference in zinc. Didn't affect pH, didn't affect the CEC, didn't affect organic matter, didn't affect soil moisture or soil compaction, the HDG that was just on that commercial. So who am I inclined to believe? An article, granted this was from a junk journal, but remember we showed it from a really high quality journal last week, the same setup basically, and it had HDG in there, and there was the same results where there was nothing happening from any of those when it comes to the soil extractable nutrients changing as a result of applying HDG or humic dispersible granule compared to doing nothing, not just from urea, but compared to doing nothing at all. Okay. So don't buy it. I mean, I don't mean don't buy the product, if you want to. I mean, don't buy what the marketing says. Don't believe it. If you want to buy the product, it's your money. Okay. But when it comes to whether or not there's evidence to support the marketing claims, I haven't found it out of however many papers we've looked at. I haven't found it yet. Okay, folks, I appreciate everybody's time today. I'm going to read through the chat to see if there's anything else, but that's all I have for that. And we have a couple things at the very end here. Let's see. Okay, thanks, Chadley Hamill. He says, do my own, has the HDG or the humic coated urea for $78 for a 50-pound bag with free shipping. That's what Chadley Hamill's saying in the chat. And I don't know what urea is from that same vendor, but I imagine it's less than $78 a bag, substantially probably closer to 40-ish or 50-ish, something like that. I don't know. Okay. And Michael Conroy says, what is AFCO? It's not AFCO. I may have just mispronounced it. It's AFCO, the American Association of Plant Food Control Officials, which actually controls the definition of fertilizers. What is a fertilizer defined as? It's controlled by the American Association of Plant Food Control Officials. And they define it. They define a lot of products based upon the consensus of specialists in that area. So they'll send a request out to scientists and say, okay, we're looking at this product, and they'll have two or three or four products on there. And they'll say, are you, in your opinion, are these products consistent with, or do they meet the standards or the requirements for whatever definition they're asking? And then you say yes or no, and you have to provide any citations, you know, say yes, because of this, this, and this, these citations say that, and so forth. That's why I do have some confidence in AFCO, although their book is not easy to follow. It's not a book. It's more like a glossary of terms. But, you know, it is what it is. Ben Squire says, self-certified marketing. Yeah, self-certified marketing. Okay, I'll be back on Monday for the members only. If you want to watch the members only stream, become a member, and you'll see the the link be put in the community tab of members only community tab for Monday morning show, and it'll come up on Saturday or Sunday, or who knows, maybe Monday morning, depending on when I put it up. Until then, enjoy the turf thoughts and the music afterwards. I really appreciate everybody for everything you're doing. The channel's growing. I really appreciate your feedback and the kindness you all have provided to me. And I will see you guys on Monday morning. Thanks a bunch. Bye. And now, Turf Thoughts by Ken Corley. If you have moles in your yard and you want to get rid of them, I recommend you yell at the mole, "Hey, get out of here." If that doesn't work, I recommend hooking up a hose to the exhaust of your truck, put the other end of the hose in the mole hole in the ground, and then start your truck. When your neighbor asks what you are doing, just tell him you saw a leprechaun in your yard and you're trying to kill it.